woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Well, welcome back to Section J. I'm the Mountie, Mr. Metler on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill as well. We have SP Futures up 10 and a quarter. We got the Dow up 113 and NASDAQ up 33 as everybody's convinced that somehow or another, there's a couple of people that are still bearish yesterday on Finance TV, but most people are absolutely convinced that you can't have any risk of the upside because somehow or other, they still believe that the president's going to pull one out of his hat at this meeting, and they'll all be best buddies, and they enjoyed dinner together and had, I don't know, egg rolls or whatever, who knows, but they're all happy. And he's not happy with Chairman Powell. I'm not even a little bit happy with my selection of Jay. This is the guy who did nothing but complain that the Fed, the interest rates are too low, and Obama was there. So, whatever. Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I haven't moved anything offshore. Nobody's mad at me.
No. I got this guy who does this podcast, me. When all this stuff about the taxes was talking about, and all they did, and we must have had 20 people who were guests, everybody's talking about fairness, the poor corporations paying too much. How can you charge them 35% when you got this offshore? Well, they had to put it offshore because you're charging more than other countries and blah, blah, what a bunch of crap. And I was steadfast with the whole thing in saying it has nothing to do with the rate. Anybody who thinks that if you make the rate 20 or 25% where it becomes, quote, fair, that people will not continue to want to take advantage if they can find a place where they only pay 10 or 8 is really out of their mind. And I don't think I had one person who thought I wasn't out of my mind. Was I right, Kevin?
Well, I think you're out of your mind.
Yes.
Not because of that.
I mean, was I right or not?
The thing that people are not considering is that may change the math a little bit, but it's still the math. So, you know, there are so many factors involved that are not related to taxes that may drive somebody to make the decision to move that, you have to look at, you know, do the whole spreadsheet, is, I guess what I'm saying, is that you can't just look at the one factor. You can see how that factor changes things, but is that enough to change it completely or not? I don't know. I'd have to see their sheet. I'll tell you what kind of frosts me about this, though, is in GM's case, nobody benefited more from government largesse in other words, the public's largesse in 2008 than GM.
Yeah, the shareholders do.
I don't. Huh?
How the shareholders do? Not so hot.
Well, they had worthless stock, so yeah. I guess if they got something out of it, they did okay.
They didn't get anything.
But that's not really my point. My point is they got bailed out.
Yeah.
Sort of think that you could stick around then.
These people
I might have an obligation to employ people since that's the reason you got bailed out was to continue to employ people.
I think that these people have absolutely zero conscience. They have absolutely someplace somewhere.
Apparently, that's true.
I don't understand where the dividing line comes, Kevin. If you have a plumbing store or something in your area, or somebody does here, there's no doubt that I think most of those people feel that they're somehow connected to the community in some way. I mean, you're not going forward if the community's going backwards. I mean, your kids are in a school with everybody else. You know, if you give everybody bad toilets, and they all leak, you know, somebody's liable to find out about it. I mean, there's some connection someplace, but at some level, and a trading floor was like that. When everybody traded for their own, or had, you know, one or two people, you made a trade with somebody. It was your trade and their trade, and you know, if you absolutely trust the person, you made a legitimate error, you split it, you know, type of thing. But then came, at some level, when everybody had 20 people working for them, well, no, they couldn't just approve the out trade. They had to talk to their boss. Well, their boss wasn't here. And the morals became different. Well, we're not splitting anything, you know, that type of, and I don't know where that level comes, but I do remember when I was on the board, and I know it sounds like I'm jumping around, but it actually is a theme here. I was thought to be, you know, a rabble rouser. Imagine that. But the attitude is so totally different. It wasn't like people didn't like me or anything. And I think they did. And I actually enjoyed my company. It's a 3-year term. He'll be gone. Just ride it out. And by the way, he'll mellow a little bit. He'll become part of the group. He'll get captured somehow. We'll put him on enough committees where
he'll become compromised.
He'll become compromised. And he'll have so much work he's doing here, and he may be trying to do the stuff that he wanted to do, but he's not going to get anywhere. And oh, by the way, at the end of 3 years or 6 years, which I was there, you know, they were right. They all outlasted me. I mean, and Trump is such an egomaniac, and I'm just stating fact. I'm not criticizing. He thinks he's different, that these people actually care about what he thinks. They don't care. All they know is in 2 years, he's gone, or maybe another four. But, I mean, there's nothing he can do. You think General Motors cares about what he thinks? I mean, you see it happen in Chicago, and the politicians are so stupid collectively, not individually. They're so stupid. You think Amazon hasn't figured out that they've ripped people off on taxes forever, and yet as soon as they say they're bringing someplace there, the place basically wants to perform oral sex on them? I mean, instead of as soon as he gets off the plane in Illinois, throwing him in jail, if you roll out the red carpet and say, how would you like me to give you somebody else's neighborhood for free? I mean, it's amazing. They know that they're like professional sports teams. They can take, and then whenever they don't want to take anymore, well, we're a business. We got to run like a business. Well, wait a minute. No northern business gets that largesse. Yeah, but not now. Today we're a business. Yesterday we had our hand out. And these politicians let it happen again and again. Am I right? I mean, how was that for a rant?
Well, yeah, I think they come in and really they get rolled. And, you know, we've seen that a number of times with Trump when, you know, he may persevere, he may get win his fair share. I don't know, but you know, my point is that, you know, he came in, and what was the first thing that happened is, well, you know, he got rope-a-doped into having the special counsel that's hung over his head for the whole time. You know, it was something that didn't necessarily need to happen, but it was almost like Comey decided to set him up and force it to happen. And frankly, Comey has said as much, that he was, you know, that was behind what he was doing, because he, you know, that was why he leaked all that stuff through a friend to the New York Times. So, you know, you come into Washington thinking, hey, you've got the world, you know, the world at your disposal, and you spend a little bit of time in Washington, you find out you don't.
No.
I think the same thing happened with President Obama early in his tenure, that, you know, there was, when he wanted to pass the stimulus, I think he wanted to do the stimulus for the right reasons, but by the time that bill got to legislation, and it happened real quickly, it was a whole different agenda.
Right. Oh, yeah, people just, and I don't think anybody really has the power or the state or the only way I think you could probably do it is constantly take your voice to the people. But I think it has to be done differently. It can't be done in sound bites. It has to be done in something carefully worded.
Maybe, well, and I think you got the people who are there in Washington, and it's sort of like you know, Michael Corleone sitting down with Carlo, who had married his sister.
Yeah.
And saying, "Come on, Carlo, you know you can't fool a Corleone."
Yeah.
You know, I think you get a certain amount of that in Washington, where, you know, they're just looking and saying, "Yeah, come on, you think you can roll me on this? I don't think so."
Well, why, Kevin, just out of the blue?
The other way. And so it's really, you know, this is sort of as you look at Nancy Pelosi, who will be speaker again, despite, you know, all of the rancor about it. Do I think she's a brilliant woman? Not really. Do I, you know, do I like her policies? No. But, man, she's a player. She is shrewd and tough, and she knows the game, and because she's been at it for a long time. And that's what you're up against. That's what Trump's up against. And it's not just in Washington, but it's also amongst the a business like GM, where, you know, Trump knows his real estate, and he knows his media stuff, I'm sure. But, you know, now you're getting into a different world. You're getting into the manufacturing world. Does Trump really have any sway there? Does he know? Does he really understand the players? I don't think so.
Well, and it's kind of a power grab. But on the tax thing, you know, sort of want to give the reason I was. Want to talk about it a little bit as a head of, not the head, but one of the guys from the AFL-CIO was on yesterday. And I recall, Kevin, when we saw this tax bill come through, I don't know if we had Carl Denninger on or we had somebody, I remember the conversation. They said, okay, the corporation.
Was it a brilliant conversation?
Oh, yeah, it was a brilliant. Well, he basically said.
Probably with me then.
Could have been, well, the tax rate went down to, what, 21 for corporations. And that day, I mean, I heard it a couple other places, and they said, "What happens if somebody who's overseas? Well, somebody overseas now, if he makes the profit over there, doesn't have to bring it back at all." So you essentially went from this 35% tax rate, where you could subtract what you paid overseas, okay, and you know, if you brought it back, to now you're down to 21, but you don't have to bring it back. So you can just leave it over there. So you're talking about a 0 to 10% rate, depending on what country you're in, and depending, you know, what you're accomplishing. So the advantage then was you're not going to pay 35, but you probably could have paid, you know, 20 or something, but because you paid something overseas. But now the money comes back. If it's not considered made here, you don't pay anything on it. So in fact, you're paying zero. So that the bill was flawed to begin with. If that was one of the goals, to encourage people to bring things back, it's actually worse than it was before, in most people's minds. But Carl's going to come out Friday and talk about this. But so this guy from the AFL-CIO, he's like, they have more of a reason to go to Mexico than they did before the tax bill. So it's not like nobody knew that, Kevin. I mean, these people are smart enough. I mean, if I know it, I got to believe the tax people from, you know, Schmo and Schmo to put the thing together. The lobbyists, they knew it. They're not that stupid. Right? I mean, so you put together a bill. Now, is Trump just a blatantly flat-out, flat-ass liar? And Mnuchin and all these other guys? Or do they just come out and tell us whatever they feel like saying? Or do they not know it? Which is worse? I mean, clearly, it's more of an advantage to be, you would think that at 21%, you'd be a citizen and you'd pay. Because obviously it's a fair number, right? These people, they don't care about fair. If it's 10% in New South Wales, they're going over there.
Well, you know, it's funny that it would catch the president by surprise too, because he knows the tax game. He's played it, he's lived it, and so it is, you know, to find out that somebody's not going to an advantaged tax situation or an advantaged labor situation, frankly, which may be more what's behind GM's move, net of the tax, any tax benefit they can get by staying put. Nevertheless, you know, I go back to the ethics of that, and I just don't understand a corporation like that got the bailouts, you know, packing up and going. To me, that's an unconscionable. It's legal. It's not ethical.
Right. Well, I mean, Sears, they screwed themselves out of business basically. But what did Hoffman Estates give those guys? They basically, you know, I was going to say something bad, but. You know, other than giving them hookers with happy endings, they gave them everything to move out there, and they never got that money back. Now some of the school districts are suing them. Well, you're suing them now. They got no money. That's interesting. You know, I mean, but yet we'll continue to get.
Well, Mayor, what they're doing is they're getting in line for the liquidation, I'm sure.
Well, Mayor Daley gave Wrigley some huge spot on Goose Island, TIF benefits, the whole bit. 2 days after he gave it to them, they closed their plant on the south side. How do you not say forget about the TIF benefits, you idiots? What, do you think I'm that stupid? These guys continue to get rolled. It is unconscionable, and yet the parking meter do everything. These guys, it's all everything is one day in front of their mind while their term, and then all of a sudden, you know, you find out, how'd you get here? We paid I went to a wedding downtown last week. I parked downtown on the street for 4 hours. It's $27. That money's going to where? Australia or someplace? I mean, that giant sucking sound of you wonder where the money's coming out of Chicago, where it's going. Why is that money? At least if it was going to the city, you'd have some sort of you'd feel, well, at least it's paying, you know, for some policeman somewhere. It's going somewhere else. I mean, how can you have that kind of sucking sound? Like, and have the money going somewhere else. That is borderline. How can you elect somebody that stupid and not be able to put them in jail? Yeah, you know, what do you figure?
These are rhetorical questions.
Yeah, I mean, but these are long term situations. I mean, 15 years from now, the city is going to have less people. Still can't pay the pensions, and somebody somewhere is making $12 billion a year on parking. It's not even here. I mean, what are we doing? Yeah, you know, I'm saying if you're going to rip people off, at least let's rip people, have the city rip them off, because at least somebody here is getting the benefit. They might actually go drink in our saloon, but it's not going to happen if the money's going wherever. Where are these guys from, Eddie? The parking Peter? I know they're not from here.
I'll find out.
And I mean, so it's endemic up and down the chain. I mean, Kevin. I mean, and now Carl's right. Why should? And then you got to ask yourself the next level of questions. How is it that these guys have been in Mexico for what, 30, 40 years now, and somehow or another they're still paying $3 an hour in Mexico? How's that happen? Who are they paying off down there to make sure that anybody who goes on strike, his family gets killed or something? I mean, something somewhere is wrong.
It'll actually be interesting to see if the New Deal, assuming it gets ratified, forcing higher wages, if it actually takes effect, if the reality is going to be what's in the deal.
I'm sure not. I'll make a stab at it. I'm sure not. So, I mean,
there's going to have to be some show of it.
Well, those people are here. Now, here's another place. Actually, what happened here? I mean, it's not like they're moving. I don't think they're. What they did is they put the new plant down there, correct? For Chevy Traverse, because they said the truck sales are booming. So they put the new plant down there. What, a year ago? 6 months ago? If I can follow this through, if a listener knows, maybe I can tweet in. But I think they put the truck plant down there or announced it. I'll make a stab at it and say 6 months ago. And then this announcement here was there's not enough cars being sold, so we're going to have to close the car plant here. Well, obviously, what people would have liked to have said is, well, the car situation is going lower, so come Christmas time, we're going to turn the plant in Ohio and the plant in Michigan in the Chevy Traverse plants. That's what we would have liked to have happen, correct? And it's going
that's
the other
correct.
Way. But it's a two-stage transaction. In their mind, what are you talking about? The demand for the cars built in Ohio are low. We're closing the plant. What's the big deal? What are you bitching at us for? We didn't make the market. But in fact, they probably knew a year ago that this was a two-step transaction, and they pulled one over on our president and everybody else. And if I was in the Oval Office, I'm sure they pulled it over on me. You know, I mean, it's not like they... You know, if they care who's there, they have their hand out when they need it, and they don't when they don't. It's that simple. Now it's a business. 2 years ago, you were a charity, or 8 years ago, correct?
Correct.
By the way, Chief, just to put a bow on the parking meter thing, City of Chicago has 36,000 parking meters. In 2008, it sold them on a 75-year lease for over $1 billion. The buyers were led by Morgan Stanley, but as Matt Taibbi reported, former Stocks and Jocks guest, in his book, the state-owned investment arm of Abu Dhabi ended up owning a large share, possibly a controlling majority in the parking meter system. So Abu Dhabi is getting the majority of the share.
Do we have any idea of what the revenue is per year? It's got to be $1 billion.
I don't know. I'll have to look. I'll see if I can find that. I assume I can find that.
But they obviously put new meters and stuff in, but I mean, how can it not be? I mean, the whole city's a parking garage, for God's sake.
And what contract ever is 75 years?
Yeah, it's astounding.
I've never heard of a contract that long.
Well,
that's,
I'm sure, Matt, that's why the number was so big. And the city was so desperate for the cash that they did it. Because being out of cash forces people to make decisions they would never make otherwise.
Yeah, but, well, here's... I'm not big on laws, as you know, Kevin, but I don't know where this could come from. Probably not from the Fed, but certainly from the state. The first law I would put in is that if any time a city or a state sells an asset. So maybe it needs to be a federal law. And I mean, who knows? It might have to be in an amendment. Whenever you sell public property over a certain amount, I'm not if you sell an old desk or something, but that money has to go into essentially an endowment, sort of like a university. So in other words, if they sell the parking meter for $1 billion and the interest rate's 5%, Daly gets to use 50 grand, or what would that be? 500,000 a year. Now what's 5% of $1 billion? 50,000, right? No,
I'll take your word.
No, I'm sorry. 10% would be, 100 million. Okay, so 5% is 50 million. He gets to use 50 million this year. If the trust is earning 5%. He doesn't get to take the entire billion, throw it into current expenses on a 75-year deal, and say he's balanced the books. I mean, that's stone cold stealing.
So,
right.
So get this, Chief. Chicago's parking meter system raked in $134.2 million last year in 2017, putting private investors on pace to recoup their entire $1.16 billion investment by 2021 with 62 years to go on the lease.
Wow. That's not bad. I mean, because the beauty of it is, Kevin, or the thing about when you talk about, politics, and you'll have your people that say, don't take this wrong, mostly from the right, who bleat like goats that it should be run like a business. Well, it is run like a crooked business. I mean, it's absolutely run like a business in a lot of ways, but it's a different style. When you have Bear Stearns and those guys essentially cheating on their books, A, it's against the law, all right, and B, if you do it and screw it up, you're going out of business and maybe go to jail like Enron and so forth. But if you and I run, okay, for mayor of, whatever, Podunk, essentially what we're doing is we're putting ourselves...
Oh, my town.
Yeah, your town. But essentially what we're doing is we're putting ourselves in front of people saying, I Tom Howard, I'm going to do a better job than Kevin O'Neill at, I'm going to tax you at this rate and I'm going to give you services at this rate because I'm going to run an efficient operation. And Kevin says, no. By the way, he's never run an efficient operation since I knew him when he had the lemonade stand. We didn't make any money there. So you're going to say, no, I can do it better. I can tax you at pick a number, 25%, and I can give you an Army, Air Force, Marines, and all this other kind of stuff, and I'm going to do a better, more efficient job. That's essentially what you're doing when you go to the polls, correct, other than the social issues and everything else. You're saying that you're going to run the place better. But when you get in there, if all you do is cheat on the numbers, nobody has any idea whether you're being efficient or not. So you're going to present a balanced budget like Mayor Daley did, and he's a friend of mine. He's going to say, I have a balanced budget. Well, bull bleep. It wasn't balanced because the $1 billion you took in is what you needed. It's a one-time charge. And oh, by the way, he sold the Skyway too. And they sold Millennium Parking Garage. So all that was brought into, that to me is cheating. So when you run against the next guy, he's going to say, "Well, what are you talking about? You're not balanced. You're not balanced at all. You should be $950 million in the hole." Well, no, I'm not. I just got this $1 billion and I used it for paychecks last week. Well, that's the same as somebody not putting something on their balance sheet, Kevin.
That's changing a long-term asset into an expense.
So you
nicely done.
So whenever you do something like that, you make the population, if they were smart enough to care anyway, which some people do, you make the population into something different. It's just like this tax bill. I mean, you have a president and all his people and all basically the right. I mean, I don't think the left understood it either because they didn't argue it very well. They came out and told you that this is gonna keep business here, and in fact, it does exactly the opposite. Now, what do you do about that 2 years later as a citizen? Do you just shake your head? Do you not vote? Do you vote for a third party? I mean, what do you do? SP Futures up 9, Dow Futures up 110. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello, Hope Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down, up 11, as we're absolutely convinced that somehow we're going to pull a rabbit out of our hat at this meeting. Everybody is so concerned about not
having this upside protected, I don't know. I'm nervous about it. Although I'm one of the same people. I don't have any calls out there that I sold because I'm worried about the market getting in the way. I may live to regret that. We'll see. Anyway, S&P futures up 11. Dow futures up 134. NASDAQ futures up 34. Over in Europe, we've got also the Jay Powell speech today, which will be interesting because Trump is already all over him. He's not a bit happy about him, blah, blah, blah. DAX up 16. Call that flat. FTSE down 8. Call that flat. CAC around down 15.3%. So very little action over in Europe. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei back over 22,000. Up 224, 1%. Shanghai up 27, that's 1%. Hang Seng up 350, that's 1.3%. As they also are drinking the Trump's going to shake hands with Xi, and blah, 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 and we're going to say this is all over. I don't know, Kevin. They're demanding from China, from what I understand, not only that they're not going to steal any intellectual property in the future, they're essentially saying that, forcing them to admit that they have in the past. Because for them to say they're not in the future basically says, Mr. O'Neill, you're not going to kill anybody anymore, are you? Now, if you say, no, I'm not, you're sort of tacitly admitting that you have in the past, correct? It's sort of the same deal.
Yeah, when did you stop murdering people?
Yeah, when did you stop? Yeah, that's the same sort of thing. So that's kind of what why the China is not really at the table, from what I understand. Oil up 18 cents, 51.74. Looking pretty low there. Brent up 2 cents, 60.23. Natural gas up another 2 cents, 4.28. That rallied up yesterday after the show. RBOB 143. And home heating oil 188. We've got gold is down 20 cents and silver up 3 cents. So nothing much going on there. Matty, what do you have for us, Trevi, Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start so far in the area, expressways, roadways, and tollways. Definitely the best morning of the week as far as accidents and delays are concerned. No issues at all coming in on the south side. Dan Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Traffic building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower. Same with for the Kennedy and Edens, but no accidents or issues to report. Looks like we have one issue in the area that's in the northern suburbs. We have Route 22, which is half-day road between Old McHenry Road and Route 83, is blocked due to fallen power cables. So crews are on the scene working to get that cleaned up.
If you got an SUV, can you roll over those?
Or you could just, roll over those. And then one other issue down south, 394 north at Rickton Road, there's a crash with injuries that happened about 10 minutes ago. So crews are arriving there to get that cleared up. But everything else looks okay. Weather today, another frigid day for late November. Partly cloudy skies, a high of just 27, with wind chills in the teens. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 20 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 75. Right now it's mostly clear and 50. In sports, Bulls were off last night. Suns were in action. They lost to the Pacers 109-104. In hockey, not a great night for the Blackhawks. They were blown out by Vegas. 8-3 was the final. Hawks are a big mess.
Coyotes, so an expansion team from 3 years ago is 10 times better than the Hawks.
Yeah, that's where we're at. Coyotes topped the Wild 4-3. College Hoops, Loyola was in a rematch of the last year's Sweet 16 with top 10 Nevada. And Nevada took it to them up in Rogers Park. 79-65 was the final in that one. Also, Big Ten ACC Challenge, night two. It was Notre Dame holding on to beat Illinois 76-74 in South Bend. For the Big Ten, Iowa beat Pitt. Penn State with an upset over Virginia Tech. Wisconsin held on to beat NC State. And for the ACC, Louisville with a nice win over Michigan State in overtime. And then Duke just blew out Indiana. So right now, it was 1-1 after night one. Last night, the Big Ten went, it looks like, 1-2-3-3-3. So we're even. After two nights, it looks like 4-4 heading into tonight to see who wins the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Chief.
Kevin, allegedly there weren't very many people at the game last night. What's going on there? Just early in the season game?
It was, first of all, it was crappy weather night, and second of all, three things, really. Bad weather killed the impulse with a lot of people to go out. Number two is it's a young team, and they've been generally unimpressive so far, and I think the South Bend fans understand that when it comes to sports, the locals in South Bend are they're Notre Dame football fans and they're Indiana basketball fans. So they haven't really latched on to this team yet. And then the third thing I would say is that they haven't let go of football yet. It's still football season in South Bend.
That's true. Well, It is for a little while.
Nobody's ready for basketball except me.
Yes.
Who hasn't missed a game yet, even an exhibition game.
Well, you're true blue. You're right for him, though, too, right?
I watched a big part of that game, and I'll tell you, if Bray gets that team to the tournament, I think it's his best coaching job he's done. Because they did not look like a tournament team to me. And Illinois is 2-5. And Illinois is scrappy, and they make everyone, you know, play to that kind of ugly game. But man, outside of, you know, Gibbs, you can tell, is a player. Harvey had a nice game. We know Pfluger's a solid player. But they look really young, and they looked a little soft with the ball at times, which is un-Notre Dame-like, and they didn't look very athletic.
Well, I wouldn't say that they aren't athletic. You're not seeing it because they're best players. They have four freshmen. All were top 100 ranked players, and you get different breakout games for at that age, you know. So. You know, on Saturday it was Nate Leshefsky, who did really nothing last night. But Leshefsky was, I think, 4 out of 6, and all but one of those were three-pointers. So he wound up having a really good game, and Prentice Hubb, who was their starting point guard, had a really good game against DePaul. And he was solid for the most part last night, but not great. And last night, instead, it was DJ Harvey who sort of had his breakout game last year in January, and then 2 games later was sidelined for the rest of the season with microfracture. That didn't go well. And Harvey, yes, Harvey's a player, but after the game, he said he's really sore and he's going to have to go ice the knee and all. He's still recuperating. So, 27 minutes he played last night, and that's about his limit.
Wow.
At this point, you know, that may change, but for now, that's his limit. So you see that. You see, let me see who was good. You know, Dane Goodwin is always good when he plays. That's one of their freshmen, and he is just, you know, he does a lot of good stuff, whether he's scoring or not, and I like guys like that. But I think what you see with most freshmen, whether it's the Duke guys at a different level, or the Notre Dame guys at their their kind of 4-star level, but I think what you see is that they have the big game and then they'll fall back for a couple of games, and then they come out and have another good game and they fall back, and you know, maybe they develop consistency their freshman year, maybe it doesn't happen till their sophomore year, but that's, you know, that's what they're doing, is they have four rotation guys, and they count on them. The other breakout last night was Juwan Durham, guy who had 5 block shots.
Is that the kid from Connecticut?
Yeah, he transferred from Connecticut. So his deal is he was a 5-star recruit at Connecticut, but his deal is that he tore his ACL as a junior in high school, and then he tore his other ACL as a senior in high school. He played sparingly as a freshman at Connecticut because he wasn't fully recovered, and then he transferred to Notre Dame, and he spent last year basically rehabbing his knees, practicing part-time, and he also had his wrist surgery. So he played last night, and that was probably his first significant action in, 3 years? You know, 4 years almost?
Good for him.
So, you know, he's played a little bit more as the season has gone on. So when and he's really athletic. You know, you talk about a guy who's athletic and quick. He is. So, Matt, I think you're going to. It will take a lot for them to make the tournament, because once they get into conference play, it's going to be a whole new set of challenges for the new guys. But it is a very, very talented group. It's just, you know, when. I don't know if it's talented this year or talented next year. I will tell you that the screen roll game with Prentice Hubb and Juwan Durham is going to be something to behold for the 2 years after this one.
Well, that's cool. Hey, back to the taxing a little bit. You look at these inconsistencies, and I'm sitting here staring at this picture of Trump screaming at Powell. Of course, he's not screaming at him. It's 2 different pictures that they put together. But you look at this is what happens, Kevin, when you have a thing like 2008, 2007, and you decide you're going to work your way out of it due to debt. Okay, and so now you have this huge debt hole. There was a guy on CNBC yesterday who allegedly called the sell-off and thinks we got a long way to go lower. And all he's doing, Kevin, is looking at the debt stuff, sort of the same thing I was doing earlier in the week and late last week about the how many of the places in China are now starting to default on the dollar and other currency denominated loans because the yuan is going down and it costs more to service it and some of them can't. Well, this guy came out yesterday with a statistic, and where the hell he got it, I have no idea, that 14% of, not the S&P 500, but something like that, next year won't be able to service their debt. That so many people have taken advantage of the low interest rates that you would think with the interest rates this low that people would have paid down debt and done all kinds of things, because an economy has been fairly strong, certainly for the top 500 companies, that they would have paid stuff down. In fact, their debt levels are a lot higher. And a lot of them have bought bad stock that maybe at higher prices than their stock is now trading, which is pretty ignorant, but that's what companies do all the time. So there's this baggage we're carrying here. So when you look at the president, I mean, for him to come out, and I don't know if the guy understands economics or he just says the next thing that comes to his mind. If, in fact, he's the greatest president in the history of the world, and it's the best economy in the history of the world, you don't have a federal funds rate at 2%. Why do you? Or 1.75, which is even really a fake rate, because that's not the real funds rate, because the Fed is just paying interest to banks at that number. So they've injected themselves into the funds rate. And if you think, I mean, they just had a 5 or 10 year auction yesterday, and Dan Mealy calls in and he goes, well, what went out at the auction? The Fed bought like $30 billion of the auction, Kevin. What the bleep is that all about? We're not even in the secondary market. You're in the primary market. You know, why? I mean, that's the same as the president essentially, you know, going back and turn on a printing press like you would do in a kangaroo banana republic, for God's sake. Turn on the press and spend it. I mean, we're not even talking about the managing the money supply in the secondary market. We're talking about going in the primary market and buying the stuff. You just wrote a check to the government and made up $30 billion. I mean, you would think that the president should realize that if you in fact have an economy that's as robust as he says it is, I'm not so sure he's right about that. If it is that robust, the last thing you want is an extremely accommodative monetary policy, because you're going to blow the inflation up in the world. And he's got a $21 trillion essentially national debt. I mean, it's higher than that if you listen to Carl. Carl thinks it's more like 25 and they're hiding it because the numbers he looks at, it looks like 25. Well, you shouldn't be worrying about whether we go back to a normal interest rate of, say, 2.5, a real normal interest rate, where you're not paying interest rate to banks and propping it up, a real normal interest rate of 2.5, because as bad as that's going to, quote, hurt versus 1.5 when you're paying that, it's $210 billion or $250. If you're running the risk of going to 7 or 8 or 9 a la Volcker years, Kevin, I think we go broke. You should be making sure that you right now that you're A, dropping the deficit, because if in fact the economy is so good, you should be finding ways to get down to, you shouldn't be talking about stimulus plans. You shouldn't be talking about tax cuts. You should be talking about, much as I like tax cuts, you should be talking about balancing a budget here. You're not talking about having the Fed keep interest rates at zero for your next 2 years. I mean, it's the same thing we talked about earlier, Kevin. This is bizarro world. I mean, it's absolutely nuts that you're gonna be bitching at this guy because he went back to 2% when he really didn't, because all you're doing is paying interest to banks. I mean, it's insane why you should have an entire generation again of savers make no money for other people to use their cash, buy their own stock back, and have the stock go down. I mean, am I wrong or right? I mean, this is insane.
No, I think you're right. We've been walking down this path for so long. I don't know how to get out of it, but
that's why you don't want to walk.
Take a look at Japan.
Yeah,
take a look at Japan and how they've managed that, and figure that's coming our way.
Well, boy, it better not, because they have what, twice the debt per citizen that we do, and they've got no demographics. Nobody likes sex anymore. They gotta sell their condoms overseas. How bad is that, Kevin? When your young people don't even like sex.
That's a society in decay.
Absolutely. I mean,
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, what have you done to your place? You squish people into cars and businesses all day long, and they work all day long, and they don't go home. They don't want to be near anybody. It's bizarre. But no, they how they're going to work their way out of it, Kevin? You know, I have no idea. I mean, does anybody? I mean, I don't. You're going to end up having to default someplace.
Yeah, work your way out of it, or are we going to be able to handle the austerity? Nobody's going to want to swallow it, so nobody's going to want to do it. Nobody's going to run on it, and as a result, I think we're just going to have to crater. And it shouldn't have to, but I think it's going to. And we don't, again, as a voting populace, we don't educate ourselves well enough to understand that. So if someone wants to come and talk about taking our medicine, that's not going to get you any traction. And instead, we're going to just have more free stuff for people.
Well, and I think there's ways to...
And that sells. You know, people
sure
like
does.
That.
Because, well, when you go from... And I'm sure people, and I'm not going to make this a sexist thing, because guys have credit card debt, too. It's not just women. The idea that you go from $3,000 to $5,000 on your credit card, it's pretty damn painless, Kevin. I mean, so instead of...
How's that song go? Suicide is painless?
Yeah. You know, it was the MASH, right? The MASH. So it's pretty painless. I mean, there's no real reason... For the Trumper gang to say that going from $18 trillion deficit to 21 is a real problem, because guess what? It really hasn't been yet, right? I mean, what's the problem? I mean, there's people going to talk in his ear and say that if you get the debt growing, say a $1 trillion a year, all right? So divide that by 0.003. What do you got? 33. So if you can get your economy up to $30 billion a year, your GDP, $30 trillion a year, you're not worrying about it because you're growing faster than the debt's growing, and that's been the economics of Galbraith and Larry Summers to a certain extent, and the goofball from Yale that writes for the New York Times. That's been there. Don't ever think you're not paying anything back. You're saying that if you can keep. I'll be sexist here for a second. If you can keep the growth in the wife's credit card debt a millionth of 1% less than your salary increases every year, you're okay. Because if you live to be 500, you'll eventually pay it off, right? You're never really going to pay it off, but it's manageable. But you're also talking about a time where if you're best, and when Dr. Jay and I were on the score, this is 15 years ago, the Illinois was in... When did we allegedly have all these great years? Was it during the late 90s or something where the federal government had a budget surplus and everything? And remember John telling me, why are you always ragging so much on these people from Illinois? I said, John, trust me. But you asked me, you just said, are these the best of times? He goes, yeah, they pretty much are. The market's up all the time. I mean, people are working. I don't know what year he was. Somewhere at the end of Clinton administration when we were having all these surpluses. I said, John, it's the best of times. And he goes, well, yeah, I guess it is. And I said, what's going to happen when it turns down? If the state of Illinois is running a deficit now, if anything happens, what's it going to look like? Well, he goes, it's not going to look very good. And sure enough, the economy turned, and state of Illinois is damn near broke. I mean, if we're talking, if Trump is correct, which I don't think he is, if he's correct, and this is the best of times, because he's a combination of Solomon, Caesar, and God knows who together, and this is the best of times, why don't we have a $1 trillion surplus?
Well, and then follow on with, and why aren't we socking some of it away?
Right, or paying some down.
A rainy day fund. That's part of the success that some governors have had, reshaping the budgets in their states. And, even that's not, that hasn't been well rewarded, but of late. But, having a rainy day fund, I've seen that in Michigan. Michigan, we haven't really done any tax cuts or anything like that. They've taken advantage of having budget surpluses finally after all the years of deficits and government shutdowns and such, and they've said, let's sock it away. Let's build up a rainy day fund. And, that's, if we're really in the chips, that's what we should be doing. But, of course, we're not.
Well, the other issue with governments is because we have... I don't know if anybody else in the world has you know, I don't know that much about other people's governments, but didn't we have somebody on from a politician from Sweden a long time ago, Manny? Talked about how they were going broke and now they pretty much have a surplus, and in any year that's not, what did the guy call me? Any year that's not like a challenging year or something, you have to run a surplus knowing that you're going to have a bad year someplace. Right? But they kind of turned that bus around.
That's pretty much exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. And, but here, I think, Kevin, one of the problems here is, was when you talk about Michigan, okay, and again, I'm not bad mouthing or anything, the guys have done a pretty good job. But because you have a layer above you and layers below you, you can do all kinds of tricks. I mean, you can. I mean, the federal government does it. We'll shove Medicaid to the states. But now, guess what? We just saved $100 billion. But all you did was shove it to the next guy. So it's hard, really. To what was her name? Christine Todd Whitman, New Jersey. You know, she comes in on a Republican conservative. But the whole idea was she was going to balance the budget. Well, she did. She went from an accrual method to a cash-based method, didn't pay anybody. Out of Illinois. Guess what? We're balanced. Yeah, but you got all these debts. Well, that doesn't mean anything because we're a cash method now. So, I mean, there's all these games. Now, I don't know if Michigan was able to get more out of the Fed or jam more down to the local and county people, or they did it legitimately. I don't know. I mean, but
I think they did it legitimately, and to sort of give you an example is, you know, they've done a few things that I thought were smart, but one of them is because they had a budget surplus, they were able to turn around and say, yeah, we had more Medicaid shoved our way, but we actually have a more generous, the Michigan Bridges program is more generous than most Medicaid programs because it's fully funded.
Because, I mean, the games here, In some of the places in Illinois.
But again, that's because somebody came in. When you talk about running it like a business, that's because when Snyder came in, he was not a politician. He came in and he ran it like a business. He immediately set up some open reporting, open reporting, you know, open information about progress being made. All the things that you would see in the management world got implemented. Now, is it all 100% like a business? No, of course not. Can't do that. It's government. You know, sometimes government's going to be a little dysfunctional. Has he done everything right? Well, they kind of botched up the Flint situation with water. Although, you know, even that was one of those things where, you know, all the local politicians were out the day that they cut over to the Flint River from Detroit's water supply trying to save money. You know, all the local politicians were out there talking about what a great day it was for Flint to be self-sufficient on water. And boy, when the light went on that one, all the local politicians ran for cover and blamed it on the state.
Well, but that's, I think it goes on to what my semi-rant earlier. You need, for lack of, I know I brag constantly about the amount of regulation that hits small firms like PTI in this world of regulation in our industry, and how ridiculous and how time consuming it is because they don't even know what they're looking for, because the big problems are going to be in another place, not here. Okay, but what I'm saying is when Maxine Waters, and I'll use the name, comes out and talks about, you know, regulation, well, she should be regulated. I mean, she should be audited every year to find out if she voted yes on something and the company gave her, you know, $40 billion the day before to vote. I mean, nobody wants anybody else to be regulated.
Or the day after.
Yeah, or the day after. I mean, nobody wants any. But what I'm saying is when you have the city of Chicago playing games, and they don't play as many because they're big enough here, actually, Kevin, where they got to carry their own water on some of these pensions. But pick Evergreen Park. If I give you some huge bonus and kick it to the state, well, guess what? The state's got a problem. Evergreen Park's still balanced. I mean, if I have somebody retire early and kick him into the retirement pool at the state, and all of a sudden I hire, you know, Maddie Weber, and don't have to pay him as much as the guy who's 65, I come out smelling like a rose. But in fact, we're not paying two people, we're paying one. In other words, I think you need to clean this up somehow. I don't know how you do it, so people at least know what they're voting about. Otherwise, you don't. How do you? Unless you're just like some idiot like me who actually reads this stuff and cares enough to read it and talk about it. And has guests on that know more than I do on a lot of this stuff. But the games people are playing, you think you're making progress, and all of a sudden you're not. mean,
well, it is discouraging, and it's discouraging that the information is there, and you know, for most people, yes, there are games for hiding things on and cooking the books a little bit, but you know, by and large, the information that you need to make informed decisions is there, but people don't become informed.
No, nobody reads the stats in your articles from Notre Dame. Kevin, thank you very much. Talk to you on Friday. We got to talk a lot about the games coming up this weekend, eh? We'll talk about that on Friday. I'm thinking.
Okay.
I think Oklahoma jumps Ohio State, but we'll see.
They're already ahead of them.
I don't know about that. Yeah, we'll get into it Friday. There's a lot of moving pieces.
S&P futures up 12.75. Come back with Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Mel Weber. S&P futures is up 11. Dow futures up 147. NASDAQ futures up 37. As we're playing the chalk here, as they used to say at the racetrack. And with Powell speaking today, and the president dumping all over him, everybody's convinced we're going to have a handshake deal with Z this weekend, and we're going to have the Fed chairman saying they're going to go back to they'll do the December increase. The next year they're going to go back to being data determined, so they're not going to predict the three going out next year, and the market's going to rally like a mother. I feel that's probably what's going to happen, but I'm starting to sniff a rat. Russell, Russell's one of the greatest rat sniffers there are. Russell, how are you? What are you thinking about?
I'm a rat sniffer.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's a terrier and a cardi.
I love it. I've been called lots of things. I've already been called a chicken hawk this morning.
Oh God!
But a rat sniffer? That's fantastic.
Where did the term chicken hawk come from? It was
it has to do with my morning hair, and one of my kids says that's what I look like.
I think a foghorn.
We just
leg
really covered a spectrum in the first 90 seconds that I was here.
But now your children should probably know the original. Maybe look that up. I'm going to say that term comes from people who were for the Vietnam War and somehow weasel out of serving. They were called chicken hawks.
You probably just described the president.
Well, yeah. But I mean, that's right.
A person who speaks out in support of war yet has avoided military service.
Yes.
That's the second definition. Yep.
That's right. There you go.
But the first definition is somebody with a bad hairdo?
No, it's a hawk of a type that is reputed to prey on domestic fowl.
Yes, yes.
Do you see that picture of me with morning hair on the right side of that Google definition?
Well,
on Wikipedia. We're going to have to update that.
Well, I have gray hair.
You were asking me about the markets.
We were on a kind of a serious rant regarding the president and the Fed and how we're in 1 minute we got the world's best economy, and the next minute he wants 1% interest rate because he just figured out he's got a $21 trillion. I mean, this stuff. All the different things that have happened are kind of coming home to roost here, Russell, a little bit. I don't know that it's post time, but people are starting to look around, going, "Hey, wait a minute! All these companies bought back all this stock. Wow! If the economy slows down a little next year and interest rates go up a little bit, why did these idiots buy their own stock back? They got too much debt on their balance sheet. All kinds of things that seem
they've increased the debt in order to lower the equity somewhat, and then use some of the extra profits they got off of lower taxes. That's a distinct possibility. And we talked about this when I was here a couple of weeks ago, that I think it's pretty much set in stone that we're going to see slower earnings over the next couple of years when you look at the S&P 500 as a single company. So people are starting to look forward, and I think that's one of the reasons they're lightening up on stocks. Trump's using the whole Obama didn't have to try to manage the economy against any interest rate whatsoever, and they're making it more difficult on me. I think he always tries to frame things in the us versus them being Washington insider people, and even if it's one of his own guys, they're Washington insider people when they're not doing exactly what helps him out. I think that's kind of the context of where he's going with that one.
Well, why do you think people, again, we talked about interesting, why would somebody who's supposed to be fairly adept business-wise, if you actually do have a terrific economy, why do you expect, and why don't you see the danger of 1% interest rates? I mean, they have no business being there if, in fact, the economy is good.
Yeah, no, I think he probably does know that, but I think he's just, again, sticking with the theme that's been working for him for a couple of years, or even longer than that, since that's kind of how he got elected. I think the problem is eventually all those different things, eventually a single theme starts to run, you know, run its course, and I think a lot of people are getting a little worn out on that one. You know, he's been there a couple of years now, so the outsider argument doesn't really work for him much anymore.
One of our contributors the other night, they were getting an adult beverage, and he goes, you know, I just think one of the reasons why the market is going down is people are kind of over this dude. They don't even pay attention to him. I mean there's the you know, the real supporters, and whenever he hates somebody, that's okay too. But you know, uh-huh. I mean, but it's you know, you're talking about somebody who's telling you how great the world is with a $1 trillion deficit. I mean, why do you need a deficit if it's that good? I mean, it's just reaching a point where people, even you know, people who would never vote for Hillary, and I was one of them. You know, you sit there and go, well, you know, come on, now, it's 2 years. What are we doing here? We need to be doing something, and we're not. And now, yesterday, there were 2-3 people on the air, and I think you and I talked about this, Russell. Mm-hmm. This General Motors thing, why we had politicians at all stripes telling us how great this new tax thing is, and I'm going to say we had somebody on here who knew more about the bill than, I think it was Carl, because he knows more about the tax stuff than anybody, saying the incentive to bring stuff overseas is now greater than it was before. Now all of a sudden, here's a company that's doing
that's
that.
Trump's going to have to go along those lines.
Yeah, and Trump, you know, yep. is acting like somebody, you know, stuck him on a hot poker where the sun don't shine. Well, he ought to know that. Well, by the way, you don't pay anything in Mexico now. You know, you're paying 21% here. You're paying 0-10 there. It used to be 35, but you could hide it and not bring it back until you put enough pressure on the government where you could bring it back at 20 when everybody else was paying 35. So you didn't gain anything with this tax thing, and yet he should know that. If he doesn't, now he's ragging on them. What are you doing? Well, they're taking advantage of your bill, you dope.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, is that... I mean,
no, it's there's no way to disagree with that.
I don't, you know, I just wonder, is it what... Is anybody ever are these businesses so much more powerful than the politicians at every level? I mean, we've seen it with this people holding their hand out for Amazon. We've seen it. Amazon did nothing but steal taxes from them for the last 20 years. They hold out their hand for them. I mean, on the one hand, baseball teams, football teams, basketball teams. Today we're a business. You know, you can't get in our drawers. Well, wait a minute. Tomorrow we're a charity. We got our hand out. You know, I mean, I don't see how. And I know people think I'm totally nuts. When all of a sudden you come to the economic triumvirate of Chief Matt Weber and Russell, and you're the San Diego, now L.A. Chargers, and you want me to build you a $1 billion stadium, and I say,
well, now you can get that. The reason that one works is you play on the civic pride a little bit, and it's like. It's like what Amazon did. Amazon almost did the exact same thing as pro sports teams do. They basically put themselves out for bid, and you know, there's always going to be a big city that's going to be willing to, that maybe doesn't have an NFL team, that's willing to bet the farm that it's going to be a good thing for their city. So you pit them against each other.
Well, I understand the play.
You know, and they're getting right. And the next step is going to be. You know, Mexico City, London, places like that they're going to say, well, you know, if we do very well whenever we play games over in London. First of all, I have a hard time seeing the NFL expanding beyond the number of teams that they have now. I think it's already kind of diluted itself to the point of where I think it's perfect right now as far as the numbers go. But, you know, I think San Antonio would give their right arm for a team. And if they suddenly step up and say they're going to expand again, you're going to have... Yeah, you know what? If they said they were going to expand again, I bet you a bunch of suburbs in Chicago would get together and
well, okay. I don't have...
You know, all that money that we pay for a little bit extra taxi fare to get in and out of O'Hare, we might have the Rosemont... I can't think of a good nickname off the top of my head. Yeah. We might have a Rosemont NFL team.
Okay, but you know? What I'm saying is the conversation, stops at a certain point.
I just think that one's a little bit – when you get into the sports sports economics, which is something I'm really interested in. That one's not a good analogy to the real business world.
I think it's sort of, well, but other businesses have gotten onto that trick. Well, my point, Russell, is that in any other business,
we've seen it with Amazon. But Amazon was a perfect example of odds are, when everything nets out for the three cities that are getting, you know, new Amazon facilities, that at best it's going to be a wash for them.
But how would, in this world of, you know, not a whole lot's for free, if I'm negotiating with the Bears and they want a new stadium, and I'm coughing up $1 billion for the people of Chicago, Sox Park, go grab a sandwich today downtown. You're paying 0.25%.
I always thought a great, you know, because. Yeah. They were talking about upgrading Soldier Field and replacing Comiskey at the same kind of around the same time. A single place for both of them would have been perfect.
Well, okay, but yeah. What I'm saying is,
no, I agree with you. No, but, I totally agree. With
how do you
you.
Not? But how do you not get the discussion?
The teams probably didn't want that, and actually, I know for a fact the teams didn't want that, and the teams are going to get what they want because I don't. The Bears were leveraging the suburbs, and the Sox were leveraging Tampa.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, when you go down this road, I've done business with people for a long time. If I'm sitting down with McCaskey, and I say I just made you guys go from making $40 million a year to 80, I essentially just gave you guys $1 billion.
Okay. Yeah.
Now here's the part that you're missing, Ed. City of Chicago now owns 25% of the Bears.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're going to have 51% of the voting rights on the vote 5 years from now when you go to leave this town because you got somebody else to give you more. How does a city come away with nothing? You can say that you have people coming here for the games and all this kind of crap. The fact is.
Yeah, there's you charge the extra. I don't get hotel rooms in Chicago because I have no business having a hotel room in Chicago. But I assume that one of the taxes on there, goes back to sports and entertainment or something like that.
I understand. Well, okay, but that's another.
But you also, you got to assume that you have the thing. You've got 8 weekends a year. Where maybe you have an extra 10 or 20,000 people coming to Chicago.
Well, and you also have 8 weekends a year.
So what does that come to dollar wise?
But okay,
nothing.
Nothing. And by the way, you've got
relative to what they got to land the spaceship on top of the old stadium.
Yeah, well, we also got 8 to 10 weekends a year where 10 to 20,000 Bear fans go somewhere else, spend their money there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But the only two places I'm going to say that
when you mention it that way. Let's just assume all teams travel well. The whole thing is a wash.
Yeah. Only places I think have.
I don't disagree at all that we give too much to sports teams, and the amount of money that we give to sports teams could fix a lot of other problems.
Well, what I'm saying, the numbers that we're seeing now, we're talking about castigating a Fed, and when everybody, the market is absolutely betting this week. And we Buffalo the Fed to no interest rate hikes next year, or somewhere in his speech today, he says next year we're going to be data dependent instead of predicting three rating. And that's what everybody wants to see. Now the market's already rallying. But now, and we also have someplace somewhere that all I heard about yesterday, Fast Money, those guys are real smart guy, Diamond, I love those guys. They're talking about Trump needs a win. And all he does is look at the stock market. And by the way, the stock market's been going down. So he's going to come away this weekend with something he can say that he did, and to the point where we're going to have his rally next week. Now, whether it'll hold or not hold. But everybody thinks that way. I don't know. I have stuff for people all over the place that I manage. I don't have a short call anywhere. Which is probably insane. Because the volatility is high enough, I should be short calls above the market here. Yet I'm sitting there, I don't want to be short calls in stocks that have down, 20% or 10%. I've mitigated that by having the puts. But the last thing I want to do, especially in the oil, I don't want to sell the 68s and the XLE. Because why do I want to do that? Because if the thing goes back to 72, I don't want to be chasing these things. Yet, if I did it properly, I should be short the 68s. But I think these guys are going to pull, basically a rabbit out of their
bank. you don't want to be in front of that train.
Right. And yeah. But look how far down the market has gone in the last 5 weeks when everybody's worried about getting caught up. They were worried about getting their pants around their neck and they're around their ankles. Right? Basically.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're starting to see these numbers kind of come home to roost. We're talking about the greatest economy in the world. We can't absorb a what I consider to be a low normal interest rate.
Right.
Because
we can absorb that. That's we just got the guy in charge saying that he doesn't think that we can, or that he shouldn't have to manage against something like that.
Well,
I don't think anybody believes he's right.
I think a lot of people,
the market has adjusted. We were looking at two hikes next year when you look out, using the futures market to price in what's next, and now it looks like both of them were going to be within the first half of the year, and now it looks like the market is pricing in maybe two next year, but the second one, the first one being in June and the second one being in December.
That's what I'm saying. They're already...
Yeah, they're going to slow down a little bit. And, in reality, I don't know if that's really the right thing to do, but...
We've had people managing the government.
And what's funny is... Everybody believes that, what Trump says and then what ends up happening are two completely different things. And that's kind of where we've been with this G20 thing is, he keeps talking, they keep throwing rhetoric out, and then everybody expects everything to be fine after December 1st. I think that's the end of the meeting, and that the market will rally, and they're anticipating that one. And at the same time, he's trying to talk, the interest rate situation into a different direction. Why is the market giving what he says any credence on this one?
Well, you do,
you know,
because
I mean,
it's a market mover.
And I'm not arguing with it. It's more of like a big macro question out there. There's been this pattern that we've all adapted to with him. He badmouthed Boeing on Twitter. This is one of the first instances of him moving something around in the markets. He badmouthed Boeing on Twitter, and Boeing gets hit, and it was a great buying opportunity. He says some negative things or starts the trade war thing with China. We get a bit nervous in our markets, and it's given us a couple of buying opportunities. He's jawboning what the Fed should do with respect to interest rates, and the market has adjusted relative to kind of what he's arguing for, but it's kind of stayed there right now. And it'll be interesting to see if it stays there or if it adjusts back after we get the Fed announcement, on the 18th?
Well, we're starting to see...
19th.
We're starting to see
the
people...
December 19th of 2018, yeah.
I think some of the... I use the term BS. It's starting to become relevant even to... I use the term the rank and file. I mean, in the last 4 days, you've had Larry Kudlow say, well, gee, the tariffs, yesterday all he did was say what a small percentage of the economy are actually under tariffs, and it's not even rounding on the bottom line in terms of price increases, and it's not hurting anybody. Okay? And what was the headline yesterday? Maybe we rattled out to the average American next year, if the next round comes through, it's going to cost them $2,400. And there's no way on earth that the average American who's making 36 grand, the median American, not average, I'll try and be accurate, that man's going to make is going to get a $2,500 raise to even cover the tariffs.
Right, so it is a big deal.
It is. It's a huge deal.
And
then you had the head of UTEX yesterday come on, and I'm going to guess, you can't tell by looking at people, but I'm going to guess this guy is a serious conservative. Just guessing. And he's like, What the bleep are we doing? It's costing UTEX $170 million this year. And we're saying it's not costing it? What are we smoking? Our cost this year is $160 or $150 or some number because of the tariffs. I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, and I think people are up and down the chain are going, hey, this is starting to cost me. What are we getting out of this exactly? Out of this fight. Right? I think the glue is kind of coming off a little bit, but I don't, I'm just saying, I don't see the increases anywhere down the line. You can't tell a population that every single year the median person goes down lower than the year before. Maybe this year they're going to break even, hopefully. That, oh yeah, don't worry about it. What's an $100,000 tariffs? I mean, my brother Dan told me, one of the guy he plays softball with runs a auto glass place. They got a 10% price increase across the board. Maybe what percentage of those glasses come from China? 15 or 20? It doesn't matter. Everybody else used it as a reason. You can use Larry Kudlow's argument. Let's say 10% of it comes from overseas. Okay, 10% times 10% is what, 1/100th of the auto glass market. But if the other people pile on and raise it 90%, you as a consumer are paying 10% more. Larry Kudlow could say all he wants, but he's wrong yet again, right? Because now it's up for you. And what all these people are saying, this stuff's looking up for me, and I don't see a raise anywhere. Yeah. And, you know,
it has not worked its way through yet. A lot of people are saying that's the next potential step here.
Well, and they're lucking out with the oil prices going down.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows if that'll stay or not. But I mean, one doesn't equate to the other, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, oil prices are going down to where they were 2 years ago. Right? I mean,
we've just done we've done somewhat of a round trip on that one, I believe.
Right. And so the airlines are starting to do better. I mean, the extent that they hedged, I guess they're losing on their hedge. But still, what are you seeing on the Christmas season? Everybody was talking about 3 days. All I've heard about is how last weekend was so good that the Christmas shopping is going to save the entire economy and the market's going to go right back up. Yesterday, they actually came out with some of the statistics, Russell.
Uh-huh.
They're down across the board from last year.
I'm not surprised at all. And I do a lot of kind of paying attention to the anecdotal stuff because I used to cover retail, and I'd just go to the stores about once a week and see what they were doing and seeing how big the sale racks were and everything. And I continue. I think since I've been on with you now 26 minutes, I think I've gotten three emails extending the Black Friday sales.
Yep.
I've noticed that. I noticed that on the train ride home yesterday that I was checking my email, and I'm like, every Black Friday sale is still going on, and it was Tuesday, which made me wonder if what you just said was the truth. So I'm not the least bit surprised. I don't know if because the Christmas season started so early, if people don't have the same sort of urgency. We've got like an extra week in this one, because of just the way that Thanksgiving works out, and because I believe Christmas is like on, Monday.
It's on a Wednesday.
If I'm right, Monday or Tuesday. It's
Christmas
early in a week.
Day is
we get
on
an extra
Tuesday.
Weekend,
Tuesday.
Or maybe an extra two weekends compared to a normal Christmas season. So maybe, although, you know, the Christmas decorations went up just after Halloween, I think maybe some people realize they've got some time before Christmas sneaks up on them, and there was no urgency to buy this past weekend, I guess, is where I'm going with that. So I don't know if it's going to turn into a bad situation all around for the whole Christmas season, but I'm not shocked. I'm not the least bit shocked that they came out and said sales were not all that hot off the, you know, for the first weekend.
So the economy is still humming, though.
Yeah, the economy's doing fine, but I don't think that it's not like I don't think we're having the best Christmas season ever
so far.
But we do have more time in this one than we do in the average Christmas season.
Right. Well, I don't know how.
So I think that's part of the factor.
We
one of the factors.
I bitch and moan constantly about the CPI people.
Uh huh.
But I'm asking you, Professor, how exactly? But I've also said 100 times, I don't want that job. Because do it right. Well, what do you do? Like I said, the ones I look at, I buy stuff for my nephews. I mean, do trading or L.L. Bean because they have everything in talls, so I can buy stuff there. What do you do when you know the prices are up a little bit from last year, yet I've never bought anything there in the last 5 years where it wasn't one of the 20 or 25% off a couple of days?
Oh, gosh, I've never bought anything that's not on, like, monster sale.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a PhD student at Loyola that's doing that's trying to do some work on seasonal items and how to, and she's actually looking at back to school backpacks and things like that, and how to maybe try to smooth out the sales and get people to change their behaviors a little bit, maybe not buy them until October or November. And so we already have that. We got things that go on sale when they're not in demand, and you know I've always done. I've gotten. It's real easy to be a savvy consumer in this day and age with the internet.
Well,
it is. I mean, you could stand there in the store with your smartphone and check the price of something relative to the price of what's in front of you, and walk out of the store and have it delivered the next day.
Oh yeah, and then not pay taxes.
I don't think anybody pays full price for anything anymore. Well, the only time I think the last time I paid full price for something, I was out of town on a work trip, and the temperature dropped tremendously, and I went in somewhere and bought I did the man thing. I'm cold, buy a coat. Now I'm warm.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have one on,
I thought he was going to say one and bought a sweater.
But in general, I don't buy anything that's not cheap. I don't think anybody does.
Hold that thought, my friend. SP Futures up 12. We got the Dow up 164. NASDAQ up 40. Still rallying. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and it's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Mr. Russell Rhodes, Professor Russell Rhodes, and Mr. Matt Weber, SP Futures.
A.K.A. the Chicken Hawk.
Yeah, the Chicken Hawk.
A.K.A. the Rat Sniffer.
Yeah, we might want to educate the...
Yeah, real-time picture.
Yeah.
Here comes the real-time picture on the Twitter.
So. I'm gonna bet that he didn't buy a coat. He went in and bought a cardigan. Is he ever... He paid list for a card. He's
got man, I'm playing injured today.
Oh, God. S&P Futures up 13.
I rolled out of bed and called you.
Yeah, we're putting the... By the way, you're Irish, that'd be nice at this hour of the morning. Your iced coffee's sitting right here. It's a cold day.
I texted you at 4:45.
Okay.
I'll look at it. I can't make it in.
Oh, God. All right. Dow up 147.
You mean Chief doesn't know how to check his text messages?
No, God,
I'm shocked and appalled.
I have people that say he never texts back. I said, well, he never reads it.
you guys are going to laugh.
Which is the first step to texting back.
My flip phone, okay, that I still use from time to time, has a little red light on there that blinks if you got a text. The new one does not.
You can set it up to do that.
Maybe you can. I can't. NASDAQ up 45.
Doesn't Matt have a former life partner that knows how to do all kinds of things with your phone, including track it for you?
That was one girlfriend to go.
Sorry.
We got rid of her because of that problem.
We're talking about traffic and stuff, right?
Yeah, we're talking about... that was one of the reasons she was tossed under the bus, right, Matty? The tracking
That was a big one.
Yeah. Dax up 7. Call that flat.
Sorry,
FTSE down 8.1. Kick around up. No, he's seriously traded up. So... The current one is a spectacular model, shall we say. Nikkei up 224, 1%. Shanghai up 27, 1%. Hang Seng up 350, 1.3% as the Chinese markets, Asian markets are buying into the G20. We're having dinner and everything is going to be okay. So, you know, again, that's the whole market is acting like that. Oil down 29 cents again today, 51.27. Brent down 39 cents, 0.6%. Natural gas up another 14 cents because it is cold outside. But home heating oil is going the other way. Kenny Pulcheri, he still has home heating oil. He's got to be happy while the rest of us are paying for natural gas. Silver up 3 cents, gold down 80 cents. Copper, still, if you think that if you're one of these guys who looks at copper as a harbinger of how the economy is around the world, 2.73, you're not too happy with that. Manny, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're still off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, although we do have a crash now on I-55 northbound just before Lamont Road. That's causing some delays in the southwestern suburbs near Lamont, so keep that in mind if you take I-55 in. Just north of there, the Veterans Memorial, which is I-355 northbound before the Bountain Toll Plaza, there's an accident blocking the left lane. And that's causing delays as well out west. But heading in on the Ryan 57 or the Bishop Ford, you're looking good so far. Traffic building heavily on the Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same could be said for the Kennedy and Edens. Off the expressways, we have one issue right now, a crash with injuries. Sounds not great. Dundee Road westbound at Route 53 involving a school bus that was rear-ended by a car. The bus had students on board. How many is unclear at this time, but not a good start to the morning there in the northern suburbs with a school bus crash that had students involved. Hopefully everyone is okay.
I'll take my chances on the bus more than the car.
I would agree. Weather today, another cold day, 15 degrees below normal, just how we like it. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 27, wind chills in the teens. Right now it is mostly clear and 21 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 75 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 51. In sports, hockey, Blackhawks wish they were off last night. Instead, they lost 8-3 to the Las Vegas Golden Knights. A big-time blowout for the Hawks. They're turmoil right now, to say the least.
Maybe they should fire the coach. Oh, wait a minute. They already did that.
Yeah. They already tried that trick. They already started trading people, too. That hasn't worked either. Coyotes topped the Wild 4-3. NBA basketball, Bulls were off. Suns lost to the Pacers 109-104. College hoops, Loyola was in a rematch of last year's Sweet 16 where they topped Nevada by 1 to move to the Elite 8 on their way to the Final Four. Nevada got some revenge last night, though. Up in Rogers Park, they blew out Loyola. 79-65 was the final in that one. And the Big Ten ACC Challenge is now tied at 4 games apiece through 2 nights. The conference battle will continue tonight to see who wins that bragging rights battle. Last night, it was Notre Dame holding on to beat Illinois 76-74. Iowa beat Pitt, Wisconsin beat NC State, and Penn State upset Virginia Tech for the Big Ten. for the ACC, along with Notre Dame, it was Louisville over Michigan State and Duke blowing out IU. Chief.
Russ, I have a question for you. Well, let's change gears for a second here. Talk about this GM situation. Hey, I'll set the tone by saying there I was, minding my own business. I was doing some of the baseball parks, and I went to see Cleveland, and I went to see Detroit, and I went to see Toronto. But Detroit's stadium was interesting. But I get tickets. I'm sitting there, and there's this middle-aged lady, and with her two sons, and they're having a good time. And they were so we start talking because as the seventh inning rolls on, and they change 12 pitchers, there's nothing to watch on the field. So we basically start BSing, and it turns out she had worked in a fuel injector factory for Delphi. Now I don't honestly know. I should know. Kevin probably knows, but how did Delphi, didn't those used to be like Ford and GM plants way back in the day, and then they spun off because they were all covered by the auto union,
yeah.
I believe. And then became...
You're exactly right. That's exactly how that happened.
But Delphi would make fuel injectors for like everybody or just for, I'm not sure, but she claims that their plant was known worldwide as making like the best fuel injectors. Like they made them for Jaguar, they made them for other people. And she's all of a sudden, somebody basically got a hair up there behind that they were going to move the place to upstate New York because they had lost Electromotive and a bunch of other places. There's basically a boatload of people that are out of work in upstate New York. Syracuse, right? That whole area up there is sort of almost, I won't say it's like Appalachia, but damn near. I mean, in terms of manufacturing jobs that have left. And the idea was we can get people 5 hours, an hour cheaper up there. And I wonder what goes into this stuff, Russell, because I said, by the way, what happened to your husband? And she goes, well, he died of brain cancer, of kind of a very rare form, and there were like 6 to 10 other cases of it in the plant, and it's like very rare. And all of a sudden, my hair goes up on the back of my neck, and I'm sitting there, and I wonder. But she went into the whole routine. She actually had done, her husband was a foreman. She actually like had cleaned offices or was in maintenance of some kind. But then, as everybody moved, or didn't move, they didn't offer most people a chance to move. If they did, they said, well, you're 5 hours an hour cheaper up in Syracuse. She was there for like 5 months just packaging up parts. Every drill bit, every something, it's in a huge, if you've never been in a big factory, there's stuff over the place.
That's one of the things that I've always taken, that I always wondered about is when you move one of those things, that's kind of expensive.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's right.
How long does it take you to recoup the cost associated you just don't close a plant and walk away from it, especially in this day and age.
Well, she was.
They want you to do a lot of cleaning up.
Yeah. And so she goes, we ended up moving up there. She said that, but the people up there, they had people that wanted to work. She said it was 6 months or something before they got enough people that could pass a drug test because the place had, because there was no where you could actually start to plant up. And she says to me, by the way, you seem like you know a lot about numbers. I said, well, that was kind of what I did in school. And she says, I'll bet if you went back to that place and looked at all the numbers these guys looked at, I'm going to say that you come up with a conclusion that it was never worth it. And I said, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to bet that because your husband and these other people were dying from this disease, they got out of Dodge just in time. Before somebody put two and two together.
And said, that may have something to do with it.
I said, but now, now the same thing with this General Motors thing. At the end of the day, does anybody know that this is it may be a sexy thing to move overseas or across the real brand, but who's doing the, is there some nerd like me going along after him saying, hey, Russell, you made this call 10 years ago. By the way, you really screwed the pooch because you ended up spending 10% more than if we'd have stayed. I mean, is anybody reviewing any of this crap?
I think internally that's exactly what the chief financial officer is going to do, is they're going to take a look at, what did you say was going to happen and how did it work? I went through the budgeting process at SIBO for, almost a decade, and that's exactly what they would do. And say we need a budget of this to try to get in front of this many people to talk about trading options and this many people to show up to a class. And the first thing he'll do is pull out a spreadsheet. Actually, he had a big screen TV, and he could put the big spreadsheet up there, and he'd say, okay, well, you know, the last 3 years, you said this is what you said you were going to do, this is how much money we gave you, and this is how it turned out. Absolutely, they're reviewing that.
Well, they're going to...
Now, that doesn't mean that they're sharing it with us publicly.
I'm going to say
but
that...
That the results of their expectations versus what it, you know, how the reality, you know, that's kind of proprietary stuff that you don't want your competitors to know about. But they're looking at it internally, absolutely.
I'm going to be a bleep and say, because I know the man a little bit, I'm going to say Bill Bratsky was happy to review you,
uh-huh.
was not so happy if somebody reviewed the money he spent. Or the decision he made to.
Well, he wasn't the one that did the reviewing.
I understand, but I'm saying, you know, what I'm saying,
yeah.
the last person.
Oh, I think there are people that. Oh, I'm certain there are people that were. But when the Institute was having good years, we would really, and we didn't have necessarily financial goals. We had more of
right.
you know marketing
yeah.
soft type goals. But the division I worked in, if we accomplished a lot in a year. And we were not under an awful lot of scrutiny. If VIX, volumes were, if we were having really good business conditions at SIBO, we weren't under an awful lot of scrutiny either. When, I'll bet you, I wouldn't want to be there now and have to step in front of the CFO and be asking for extra money after, some of the volume trends that they've experienced this year.
Well, I guess
and I think that's the, I think it's like anything else, you know, if, you know, you've got a 200 household, and one of the people loses their job and starts making part-time, part-time money, and so the household income goes down. You're going to start scrutinizing things a lot closer.
Oh, sure.
I have a funny feeling that at a place like GM, maybe initially they didn't look at it too closely, but then you know, when we hit a rough patch in the economy, they're like, well, let's you know, what did we do before that we thought we were going to save money, and what worked and what didn't work. So. It might not be followed as closely from year to year as it should be, but at some point somebody steps up and goes, "Hey, that didn't work out particularly well."
I'm gonna say that yep. your faith in businesses is maybe a little stretched, because I'm gonna say whoever made this call at Delphi, there's always gonna be an excuse. Well, God, we didn't know they had drug problems up here. Or
oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah,
I even teach
yeah.
that in the. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I teach in corporate finance right now.
Yeah.
Is making a business decision to change things around. We did mergers and acquisitions yesterday. What's the reality behind synergies, and do you really get them?
I'm going to say
you
know,
that and
I'm going to be. But
there's actually a section that I taught where one of the things that can go wrong is management might get married to an idea. Like moving everything to upstate New York, and they'll put pressure on the people who are involved in that to fudge the upfront numbers
right.
to make sure it becomes a reality.
There's a whole
thing about the reality versus what ends up happening, and upper management makes the middle guys fudge the numbers, so when it doesn't work out the way that they had hoped it would or that they were projecting that it would, that they got a fall guy.
While you're still on GM,
yeah.
Bob writes in, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks the Letter N Jocks. Bob says, "Did you understand why GM dropped the Volt? Will they buy another electric car?"
They had gotten a lot of federal money for the Volt. That's one of.
Wasn't there a cut in federal money for electric cars?
I think there might have been, but I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why they dropped that. There was a big hue and cry because they had gotten some federal money. And they dropped it. We'll do some more research on that because I'm curious too.
Joe writes in, "Why isn't Honda or Toyota closing plants? GM isn't competitive in the sedan market."
Who's competitive in the? Do people even buy sedans anymore?
Oh, a lot of people do. Every young lady in the city wants her Toyota Corolla, and they're great cars. I mean, or Rise yeah. Chevy. I mean, not everybody has.
And you can park them.
Not everybody.
I guess think about where I live. Everybody has massive cars.
Well, I think
that's a suburban.
I can't wait for the new Bronco to come out.
That's a big suburban thing and chief thing, is to get the
yep.
biggest car you can get that guzzles the most gas, and I've never really understood that.
Now,
you do a lot of construction, so it makes sense for you, but a lot of those suburban people, they don't do any construction.
Oh, they always think they might. You know, this was, yeah, it's, I think that if you had, if I had two cars, if I was married or something, I wouldn't have two trucks. Well, if I did, it'd be a smaller truck.
You used to have two trucks, for God's sake.
Well, that was
no one has any appreciation for pollution, gas preservation, and space taking up.
I don't know.
Yeah, I do.
Well, the reason why you guys with small cars save so much on gas? Because the guy with the big car has always got to drive. When's the last time we went anywhere and didn't go in a Suburban because I could put five people in there comfortably?
When's the last time you would actually ride with another person?
I don't.
See, that's a better question. But you're right, though. Although I did take four people down to Champaign a couple weeks ago.
You did?
Yeah, in my car. There's plenty of room if you have four. The problem is if you try to do more than that, then it's not comfortable.
True. I have a theoretical question for you, Russell, because you are on the leading edge.
I'm a theoretician.
Being a professor. When you talk about mergers and acquisitions, mm-hmm. my talk about how long ago I was in school, Milton Friedman was absolutely convinced of two things, even though he was Mr. Rigorous. I mean, if he couldn't put 48 calculus things on the wall and prove it, he never trusted even himself. But he was convinced of two things. He said, if I ever have the time and a couple of grad students that I can put SIG on the project, these are two things that he was absolutely convinced. And guys at Notre Dame had said the same thing, economists, that when you talk about efficiencies, say PTI has eight people. Well, you probably can go to, first of all, efficiencies don't come in a straight line or a step function for most people. Because if you get to maybe 30 people, you hire an HR person.
Or a second HR person, whatever it is,
kind of step function. But the point is you're going to reach a spot where every business is size wise about as efficient as you can get.
Actually, you reach a peak where it starts to come down.
Well, that's exactly what they absolutely said, the guys at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I believe that is a reality.
And Milton Friedman said the same thing.
It's really because, without naming any names. Yeah, the exchange space is a space that I know very well because, again, it's where I was for the last decade or so. And now that I'm, at a consulting firm, I've learned a lot more about the inner workings of all the big exchanges in the world. And some of the really, really large ones will have, like, six people doing almost the exact same thing in different parts of the world.
I don't know what I'm getting, and it's
kind of interesting to me. At how much, coming from SIBO, which is, you and I will say things about them sometimes, but it now is an extremely lean organization. They really have, they've gotten it to where there's not a whole lot of redundancy.
Well, no,
and they did realize
they have like no members.
Stock did so well after the,
but they have no members pretty much.
Yeah.
They don't do anything. All they do is charge for quotes.
Well, they try to invent new ways to trade.
Yeah, I understand.
They market and educate on the proprietary products, trying to bring in volume. And there are more than anything else. You know what SIBO is? It's a technology company.
Sure.
You know, it really is. And that's I'd have college finance groups visit the exchange, and I go, well, we're real. How do we get to work here? I said, well, go major in computer science.
Well, absolutely.
Because that's what they hire. In fact, their IT department is really out of Kansas now, and there was an article in the Kansas City Star about how they've gone from 160 to 200 employees since the SIBO-BATS merger. It's the one area that you can't skimp on, and they actually just moved a lot of the Chicago jobs over to Kansas.
Which is special.
So they do that. But two-thirds of the employees are IT-related. And then there are other things that they're trying to do for longer-term growth of the firm. So there is more than just flipping the switch.
Well, let's get back to your mergers and acquisitions. I mean, my point is when you have, I'm going to say, I'll come speak at your class, 90% of it is raising prices. It's knocking out. Where I'm going with this is we talk about price increases.
Oh, it is. You get pricing pressures. You get pressures on suppliers as well.
Well, but I'm...
That was the academic example we used yesterday. You think you're going to be able to increase revenues because you've got a little bit less competition going on, and at the same time you're going to get to squeeze your suppliers a little bit more.
Well, but you have, I guess what I'm saying is, we look at the drug industry, and you see now Walgreens are going to let those guys merge with Humana or somebody. I mean, that's insane. But
yeah, they're going to be vertical.
I mean,
does Aetna or somebody own CVS?
They're part of it, I believe. Yeah, Matty.
Yeah, I mean, they're
what I'm saying, Russell, is
vertically integrated.
All right, so you're the third generation of economists, people that know this stuff. And yet, as a population, as our ridiculous elected officials, I'm going to say that Upjohn, I'm going to say Squibb, I'm going to say all these places that used to be drug companies, every one of them was at a size where they were as efficient as they were going to get. And when somebody went and grabbed them and gets on TV and starts bleating about synergies, and now granted, you can fire off the chairman and you only have one chairman. But guess
right.
what? The second guy's
there are cost synergies.
Well, but not if you pay them. Not if you pay
you
the remaining guy.
As much as you want, because yeah. What ends up happening is a lot of the good people leave the places because the culture changes.
Okay, but I'm saying is they're nowhere near. You're going to give the guy who remains a big enough raise to mitigate. My point is the fact
not mitigate all of it. You never get as much as you expect synergy wise. You never get as much pricing pressure on what you can charge or what you pay out for things that you need to produce whatever you're producing. It never works out as well as people say it's going to. And the reason, and that's one of the reasons that the acquiring stock usually gets hit on these things.
I'm gonna say that
we know that.
I'm gonna say that on the pricing part, mm-hmm. if you. There's also a trip line there too, I think, Russell. And this is what
there is. If there are trip lines on all these things.
Well, what
I'm
saying,
like
when you have like the big drug companies buying the generic drug companies, which has happened in the last 15 years, I think when there's 50 generic companies out there, and somebody buys one of them, you probably don't do much in the way of pricing. But there's going to get a spot where there's five of them left, and as soon as somebody grabs the fifth one, and now you got four. I think all of a sudden somebody opens up the plug in the bottom of the tub to where there's no competitive pricing anywhere.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what. Well, and beyond that, when on the supplier side, if you conglomerate into three or four big competitors in an industry, what ends up happening is the people that supply to them start to do the same thing as far as consolidation goes, and the buyers lose any of the cost synergies that they thought they were going to get. It actually starts to work its way through a system.
But I think the charging part. I mean, you look at the Chicago area. I mean, and there's I started driving on my 16th birthday. I got my driver's license, so I've always had big junks, like Maddie would say. So I always was concerned about the price of gas. There was an outfit here in Chicago, was the Clark Oil, and they got the pipeline ends at 127th and Kedzie, so you can still see there. That they still use the pipeline and pipe it to other places, but they had a refinery there. And now you had Standard Oil always in Indiana, and you had these guys, somebody else over in Bolingbrook and those kinds of places. But these Clark guys, they had some Clark stations, but basically the refinery was bigger than they needed. So they would sell.
They were selling everybody else.
Selling to all these little Keen Gas, Purple Martin.
Oh, you'd see.
Yeah,
you'd
all
see
these
the
independents.
You'd see the. If you're out at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, up to no good, and when they're refilling the underground tanks, you'd see the Clark guy at the other station, and it would confuse the heck out of you, and which meant you shouldn't have been driving anymore.
Well, and so, but you lose those guys, and then the refinery went down.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you lost probably five of these independent people. So it's not a linear thing, but the government. You might have, say, eight airlines, and if you go to seven, maybe it doesn't do that much harm. But all of a sudden, you go from five to four, five to four or four to three, and now you got, hey, guess what? because the reason why what got me on this is didn't get a chance to talk about it so much yesterday, but Stephanie had texted me some stuff, and I'm cleaning up my office here too, and I'm digging up some really interesting articles that, of course, I forgot I had. One of the big reasons I think. That we're missing, Carl talks about the salary increases in mid-management in those areas, is because of all these mergers and acquisitions. We've put a lot of people out of work that really couldn't go somewhere else. And I'm not so sure that it's okay, Russell, I mean, you and I have talked, our theme is, a lot I think, you maybe don't even know what our theme is that a lot of things aren't working economically like they're supposed to. They're like on your blackboard and the ones I studied from.
No, they're not. And the average person has no idea. And you know why? Because they're paying attention to stupid stuff.
Well, in theory, Yeah, right. But
they're being distracted by Oklahoma or Ohio State or who's going to win whatever next reality thing is going on in the world.
But the theory of it is, when you get in front of your class, I'm not going to do your class for you because you're better at it than me. The theory of it is, if Joe's Hamburger Stand takes over gyms and he can do it more cost effectively, the price of the hamburger should come down a hair, and the people, mm-hmm. the five people he laid off, there's now more money in the economy because they're efficient. They should be able to go get a job somewhere else because people got extra money in their pocket because they're paying less for the hamburger. But that's not the way it's working. You're getting the other place. You're laying people off, and oh, by the way, the prices are going up in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. and it's totally counterintuitive to what you're teaching people. I think.
It is. Well, and I try to include the real stuff in there.
I would agree.
I try to include the reality.
Yeah,
and you know what? The textbook that I'm using did a pretty good. They downplayed it somewhat, and I think maybe it's because it's written by academics and they don't fully understand it. But they did mention, you know, the reality of there's like one paragraph at the end of this.
Russell, we got to talk about it. Let's talk about it next week, bud. We got to go.
Okay,
thank you very
man.
Much. SP futures up 11. Dow futures up 159. NASDAQ futures up 40. Let's keep this rally moving. I'm long. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.